waste of time. We received three apologies on the first time. The continent to just identify the apologies, to present the apologies, but is one that you wanted to take your honorable matters who will join the meeting later.
Good morning to everyone. Comments has received two apologies from the Minister, as well as the Minister. And the other apology is from the Deputy Minister, who has to attend the PC meeting. That's all.
We have received two apologies, the ones from the DP, Mashoko Dlamini, attending the PC meeting in Mpumalanga, and the other one in Kampala, from the Minister, attending the Cabinet Committee meeting. DG, you are welcome. Honorable members, I think the register will be circulating for us to include our presence in this meeting. We must come back to the committee for this meeting. That's a waste of time. We're invited to the Financial Assistance Commission to come before the committee and brief us, because we are aware that they are assisting also, and they are making recommendations, especially on the division of revenue. We hope that the input that they are going to present us to this committee will also assist us in considering our administration as report. DG, you are also welcome. I'll just hand over this opportunity to Dr. Ramos.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. I am Ramos Mapoku, and I am Executive Director for the Financial and Fiscal Commission, representing the Commission today. And I'm accompanied with, on my immediate right, this is Ms. Poppy. Ms. Poppy Dada is a researcher in the Financial and Fiscal Commission, and she stations in our Captain office. On my immediate left is Mrs. Sasha Peters, who is Program Manager for National Budget Analysis Unit. She is also stationed in our Captain office. And next to Mrs. Sasha Peters is Mr. Ali Kukunga, who is Program Manager for Provincial Budget Analysis Unit, also stationed in our Captain office. And next to Mr. Ali Kukunga is Mr. Henry Epstein, who is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer, also operating from our Cape Town office. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the introductions. I will also request the members to introduce themselves.
Good morning, colleagues, morning delegation. My name is Mnetso Frotani, as seen on TV.
Good morning. I'm Sir Pomitomo, member of the committee.
I'm Thomas Walters, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome, delegation. My name is Ken Robertson, member of the committee.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm Andy Waddell.
Greetings, I'm PJ, member of the committee designated by the African National Congress.
The one who's speaking is considered by you, the teacher of the Federal Committee on the officials, the teaching for the
thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable members, once again. And we appreciate the invitation to assist you with your beautiful report. The way we are going to structure the input for this morning is essentially around assisting the portfolio committee with this oversight of the department. So I will say a few words on the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, then say some background around rural development and the context that we find ourselves in. We will then zero in on the department, looking at the Department of Budget Analysis, not just for the 2016 Medium Term Expenditure Framework, but also contrasting it with the previous 2015 Medium Term Expenditure Framework, and trying to pick up trends and tendencies around this. Then we will zoom into the annual report for the department and try to, again, on the basis of trends, see if there are issues for the department to look into, and say some concluding remarks. We have put in an appendix. The appendix speaks to our previous interactions with the portfolio committee. This is just for information. We won't go into these details. Previously, when we spoke to the portfolio committee, we've discussed issues around rural development in general, and we promised to look deeper into issues around rural development. I'm happy to report that as part of our annual submission for next year's division of revenue, our theme was rural development in the Department of Fiscal Relations. And that was for the first time that the recommendations for the division of revenue had a common theme for rural development running through it. So that submission details not just what rural development should do in terms of our recommendations, but also what other departments, what other spheres of government should be doing. That was the vote in May, and a response from Board of Government will be coming in the February budget. And so out of the close collaboration with this portfolio committee, one tangible fruit has come out that we've tabled all submissions for the division of revenue, that is the more rural development, and I would like to fiscal relations and schemes can be sharpened to respond to the rural development challenge. But our purposes for today is the B2R process. So in terms of the commission, as the Honorable Chair is saying, we are an independent, permanent, statutory institution that's established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution, and we function in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. It was recently amended in 2015, and the mandate of the Commission is primarily to make recommendations as envisaged in Chapter 14 of the constitution, or in national legislation to parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state as determined by national legislation. The focus is primarily on the division of nationally raised revenue. And as I said, that was the main submission that we made in May on how that a division should be made for it to respond sharply to wrong development issues. So that, in a nutshell, is the establishment of the commission. Now coming to the subject matter for today's interaction, like I said, just with some background expressing our input. In terms of dwellers or actual people living in poverty, the last most credible figure that we have is 2011. And there you see that approximately 69% of people classified as living in poverty using the Statistics South Africa definition to avoid controversies. Approximately 69% of dwellers can be found in the rural spaces, with the urban taking 31%. When you look at the rate of reduction of that poverty, contrasting between 2006 and 2011, when we had our last complete census, you see that the rate of reduction in poverty in the rural areas was 15%, while in urban areas it declined by 24%. So even in the speed at which we are reducing poverty, it's much faster in urban areas compared to rural areas. But what that statistic also shows you is it's not as if we are holding our hands, because reducing poverty by 15% over a 5-year span is also quite a strong achievement. We wish it were faster, than every areas, but still it's been falling a 15%. And these are on the percent of people living in poverty. There is commitment to rural development throughout that we see. In terms of the National Development Plan, up to 2030, there is a distinct commitment to rural development as set out in the respective chapters. When one looks at the medium term strategic framework, 2014 to 2019, again, rural development features as a standalone pillar of the medium term strategic framework. And that leads us to conclude that at least in the policy, main policy circles, the year that commitment. We've seen the development of a comprehensive rural development program led by the department, led the form of rural development, which is the centerpiece of bringing it all together. Now, we find that the rural also pay more for a basket of food than even households, which is quite worrying and contrasting, because the rough approximation assumes that most of agriculture would be in rural areas. It's turning out that although food, the main raw material in food production is in rural areas, but when it comes to paying for the food on the table, the rural areas, people dwelling in rural areas, pay more than people in urban areas. For example, average food expenditure for rural household was 24%, while it was only 11% for urban households, according to Statistics South Africa 2014. The unemployment rate, particularly among youth, is much higher in rural areas compared to both the national and urban unemployment rate. Access to basic services is increased, but at a slower pace than in urban areas. And sanitation backlogs remain
high in rural areas, despite the government interventions that we've seen. When we look in 2014 for B4 municipalities, in the district with high sanitation workloads of 47% and 31% respectively, as outlined in our submission that we checked on in May. What does the National Development Plan say around the key strategies for rural development? Well, the key strategies to develop rural economic opportunities ensuring food security. It talks about job creation through land reform and agricultural development by promoting small-scale irrigated farming. It talks about creating security of tenure for communal farmers, especially women. It talks about investing in infrastructure and in support services. Agricultural Policy Action Plan, APAP, has been developed to implement National Development Plan and the new growth path goals, and gives expression to outcomes for decent employment through inclusive growth. And 7, comprehensive rural development and food security. There are efforts by Department Rural Development and Land Reform and Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in collaborating implementing APAP, which we think is a step forward for the attainment of the rural development goals. Currently experiencing our West around 30 years, and that has impacted negatively on the agricultural sector, with the sector contracting by about 18%, 19.7%, 4.6% in the three quarters of 2015 respectively. And that is substantial social effects, including food insecurity, particularly at the intra-household level, as well as exacerbating the poverty levels that I spoke to initially. There are concerns that the land reform program has been unsuccessful, and that the associated policy uncertainty, particularly around implication of the constitutional judgment on the restitution of land rights amendment act around land reform, may serve to hinder growth and stability of agricultural sector and more generally the rural economy, and those are issues that need to be dealt with upfront. Some of the sector challenges include impact of land reform with respect to key rural outcomes such as food and nutrition security, job creation and agricultural output, where it was found that most land reform beneficiaries tended to be worse off than those who did not benefit from the land reform, particularly in respect of food and nutrition security and household income. So this is quite a counterintuitive result, because when you do land reform, your end goal is to better the lives of those persons. Now, ex post analysis of the households that you find tells you that those that you gave the land to are actually better worse off than before you gave them that land. That begins to raise serious questions around how you are doing in land reform. The recent policy proposals, for example, reopening land claims process, are likely to require substantial amount of funding to implement. And with a lower than anticipated economic outlook, that could have negative impact in the medium term spending plans of the Department for Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as its strategy to achieve the APAP goals. And we think lack of proper coordination has undermined certain sector outcomes. For example, an evaluation of the comprehensive rural development program found the linkage
with the land reform program to be weak, and that's an area that needs the effort, particularly from the portfolio committee when exercising oversight. So that, in terms of the background, underlying our submission. Now, for the purposes of today, Honorable Chair, we will go through a departmental budget analysis, and Mrs. Sasha Peters will take us through the 7-year analysis, and then Ms. Halley Down will come back with the actual analysis of the annual report for the department. And out of that, we'll tease out some issues that we think should be raised in preparation for the B2OR report.
The next slide provides insight into how the department prioritizes spending across the different budget programs. And what we see is that the land reform program, the restitution program, and the rural development program consumes the largest share of the department's budget. By the end of the 2016 MTF period, these programs are projected to consume 78% of the department's budget. And over the 2016 MTF period, we can see that there's a strong focus on the restitution program, which is that purple bar. And we see that in 2015, this program, the restitution program, consumed around 28% of the budget, whereas in 2016, there's an increase to 31% of the budget being allocated to this program, and that is largely maintained over the rest of the period reviewed. The next slide provides the disaggregation of spending by economic classification categories, so looking at compensation to employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies, and payments to capital assets. And transfers and subsidies are the largest item there, and that's predominantly as a result of your restitution claims to household. But over the MTF period, we see real decline projected for all of those economic classification items. With respect to spending on compensation to employees, for example, that item will decline by 828 million over the next 3 years, over the 2016-18 period. And that's as a result of cabinet approved reductions, which are aimed at lowering the national expenditure ceiling. There's also a decline of 3.5% in goods and services over the 2016-18 period, and this is the result of cost containment measures. In the next slide, we honed in on the department's CBS program, namely your rural development restitution and reform program. And with respect to this particular slide, the figure shows the real year-on-year growth in the rural development program. And the largest sub-program there is the rural infrastructure development sub-program, which receives an allocation of 1.9 billion in 2016-17. And we saw significant growth in the sub-program between 2012-13 up until 2015-16, and this was due to a reprioritization of funds aimed at facilitating improved access to basic infrastructure for rural households. Over the 2016 MTF period, the allocation to the sub-program is driven by the One Household, One Extra initiative, which is aimed at promoting food security and improving rural livelihoods. The second sub-program is the Rural Enterprise and Industrial Development sub-program. It's the only sub-program over the 2016 MTF period that is projected to show positive growth, albeit quite marginal. And what we noted there was a spike in the growth of the sub-program in 2015-16, and that coincides with the introduction of the AgriFox initiative. The third sub-program is the Rural Youth Service sub-program, which is responsible for training of rural youth. And we see significant growth in the sub-program for 2016-17, and that is due to renewed emphasis on projects aimed at promoting sustainable rural livelihoods. But whilst we see a spike in growth for 2016-17, over the outer 2 years of the 2016-18 allocation to that sub-program, by 0.2% in 2017 and by a projected 17.4% in 2018-19. And that is the reasons given for that is due to cost containment measures. The next slide focuses on the restitution program. And following a significant reduction in the overall growth of the restitution program in 2015 due to cabinet approved reductions, which were mainly as a result of slow spending on land restitution grants, the allocation to this program recovers in 2016, showing a strong real growth of 14%. However, over the two outer years of the MTF, the allocations to this program are again projected to decline marginally by 0.8%. The sub-program that seems to be prioritized over the 2016 MTF period is the Restitution Regional Offices sub-program. And as you can see, if you look at the last column, that sub-program is projected to grow by 3% over the 2016 MTF period. And that is the sub-program that is responsible for researching, validating, verifying, and negotiating settlements in respect of land claims. The following slide provides more detail on the Land Reform Program. The largest sub-program there is the Land Reform, is the Agricultural Land Holding Account. And that sub-program is responsible for buying and holding land until suitable beneficiaries can be identified. Over the 2016 MTF period, there are two sub-programs that seem to be relatively prioritized compared to the others, and that's the Land Reform Grant sub-program and the Office of the Valuer General sub-program. The Land Reform Grant sub-program provides funding for land acquisition and settlement, and it's projected to grow by real operations on land earmarked for land reform and restitution purposes, and that sub-program is set to grow by a real annual average of 4.4% over the 2016 NTS period. Chair, the following slide just provides the list of the entities that report to the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. There are three: the Agricultural Land Holding Trust, Ingonyama Trust Board, and the Registration Deed Trading Account. What the following slide provides is just a snapshot of the transfers by the department to the entities. And what we see is that the biggest transfers in respect of the is in respect of the Agricultural Land Holding Account, which is projected to receive 4.6 billion over the 2016 NCF period. And its main aim is to purchase strategically located land in respect of the land distribution process, redistribution process. Now, both the Agricultural Land Holding Account and the Ingonyama Trust Board is projected to experience real annual average declines over the 2016 NCF period. However, the registration of deed trading account seems to be strongly prioritized over the 2016 NTF period, with a growth in allocation projected at 53.7% over the next 3 years. The main goal of this entity is to contribute to effective land planning and property registration. And what is driving that significant growth in that transfer is the fact that the entity will implement an electronic register system, which is aimed at improving the property registration process, as well as improve the turnaround time for registering a property. Chair, if I can hand over to my colleague, we'll look at the annual reports.
So this section basically takes us through the annual report analysis for the department for the 2015-16 financial year. Looking at the spending performance of the department and here, what we did was we compared 15-16 spending performance for the five programs and we compared it to 2014-15. And what we noted was that the department spending has marginally declined from 99.4% in 2014-15 to 99.1% in 15-16. So the department actually spending performance declined from the previous year. And when we look at the specific programs, we note that the programs that underspent were National Geomatics Management Services as well as the restitution programs. However, what we found was that there was no clear explanation of exactly what the reasons for the underspending are. Moving on to the next slide. For the 2015 financial year, the department received an unqualified opinion by the AG, but it did raise certain emphasis of matters. And these matters revolved around two main issues that we picked up. The first one was that there was no daily or monthly internal controls in place, which essentially led to material misstatements that were subsequently corrected. And also the information system weaknesses, which detracted from federal preparation of financial and performance information. So those were the two main areas of emphasis of matter that the AG raised in its report of the department for 2015-16. The AG also reported that there were 17 cases that were being investigated by the internal audit function as at the 31st of March 2016. And these cases relate in the main to allegations of corruption, fraudulent land claims, mismanagement of valuations, and procurement irregularities, among others. Now, the financial impact was not quantified as investigations were still ongoing in this regard. Now, moving on to our assessment of the performance targets, and here what we did was we looked at the performance targets for the department as a whole, and we also looked at it per individual program. So from our assessment, what we found was that the bottom met or exceeded 63% of the performance targets in 2015-16. And although that they spent 99% of the budget and only achieved 63% of the targets, our assessment was that the main, one of the reasons for that spending 99% of the budget and only achieving 63% of the targets was that some of the targets were actually overachieved. So maybe some of the resources that the department utilized went into some of those targets that were actually overachieved. That could perhaps explain the variance between achievement of targets as well as the spending of the budget. Now, moving on to the actual assessment. So what we did was basically did an assessment of the performance indicators. And what we found was that the performance indicators were generally well formulated. And most of the indicators met the strong principle that is required by National Treasury. However, there were some performance weaknesses that was of concern. And here what we'll do is we'll just highlight the main areas of focus for each program. Under the administration program, only 40% of disciplinary cases were finalized within 90 days. And this was against the target of 60%. Now, underachieving on this particular target may have financial implications, especially since days are lost in the cases where staff, for example, would be on suspension. So underperforming on an indicator like this needs to be considered quite seriously because there are financial implications that may be involved. Also, 40% of vacancies were filled within 4 months. However, from our assessment, there were no indicators in the department's annual report that actually looked at addressing this particular issue. Under the National Geomatics Management Services Program, the indicator sets of solution modules deployed was terminated, and this was due to an investigation by the Special Investigations Unit. Now, moving on to the next program, which is on the rural development, what we found was that some of the indicators under this program could be a bit more specific, especially those that relate to the department's role in terms of facilitating as well as supporting its outputs. So, for example, you have indicators such as number of infrastructure projects facilitated, number of rural enterprises supported. It's not quite clear what exactly the department did when they facilitated these projects, what was the actual activity that needs to be measured or focused on. As well as the other one, what exactly does support mean? What type of support was provided? Those are the types of activities or outputs that one wants to focus on in order to determine what exactly was the performance of the department. Now, when we looked at the restitution program, we found that the department actually overachieved on settlement of land claims. So they achieved settled 617 land claims against a target of 463. But our concern was that achievement of the land claims, what is that as a percentage of the total backlogs? And that information is not available in the department's annual report. So in other words, although we know that the department settled a certain number of land claims, we are unable to track to what extent has the backlogs been finalized. Claims lodged by 1998 to be researched was not achieved. So they had a target of 2,660 and achieved 2,542. And the reason provided by the department was that this was due to poor research reports that were submitted by the service provider. Now moving on to the final program, which is on land reform. And here what we found was that the department only achieved 11% of the total target on allocating hectares to farm dwellers and labor tenants. And from the department's explanation, it's no clear a narrative of exactly what was the reason for the low achievement on this particular indicator. Similarly, the department only 40% of labor tenants applications were settled, and the other department highlighted issues around capacity constraints as a reason for the underperformance. Then, the department overachieved by 33% in allocating hectares to smallholder farmers. So in terms of allocating hectares to smallholder farmers, the department overachieved by 33%. But what is unclear from this particular performance indicator is whether this allocation is on a lease-only basis or whether it involves a transfer of ownership rights. So are these smallholder farmers being granted these hectares on a lease-only basis, or are there actually, is there also a transference of land ownership rights with respect to this? Now, besides making transfer payments to public entities, the department also made transfer payments to NGOs, universities, and other agencies. And from our assessment, some agencies that are receiving transfer payments have either not spent the allocation or have underspent the allocation that they received. The reasons for the underspending is not quite clear because it's not provided in the annual report. And here, the Commission feels that the committee needs to ascertain that the agencies that underspent were for valid reasons and not because transfer payments were received relating to the financial year. Now, just moving on to some concluding remarks. The department received an allocation of 10.1 billion in 2016-17, which indicates a growth of 3.4%. And from our assessment, the distribution program seems to be being prioritized in the 2016 financial year. Also, when we look at where most of the resources are being allocated, we see that it's being channeled largely towards land reform, restitution, and rural development. And these three programs consume 78% of the resources of the department. So therefore, from an oversight point of view, these three programs should be the area that we tend to focus more of our attention on compared to the other programs. The Commission found that there were certain concerns around policy uncertainty around land reform, especially in light of the Constitutional Court judgment, which serves to hinder the growth and stability of the agricultural sector and more generally the rural economy. And it also, a multi-sectoral policy approach is needed to attain rural development objectives. In other words, the department on its own won't be able to achieve the rural development objectives that are in the strategic outcomes and a medium-term strategic framework. You actually require a collective approach involving other sector departments as well, especially Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, which we have found to be quite weak in terms of coordination between the departments. Also, the committee needs to ascertain from the department the following: how it will address some of the human resource challenges that are highlighted in the annual report, the extent of the land claims backlogs, how long will it take to address these backlogs, and whether the department is taking any measures to speed up the process. Also, reasons for the poor performance of indicators servicing land tenants and farm workers, and what measures are being taken to address the problem. And then finally, an explanation on the underspending by agencies receiving transfer payments from the department. So those are the areas that we feel the committee needs to get more or request more information from the department. On that note,
thank you for the informative presentation, members. I've been listening to the presentation. Dr. Mamas, I don't know whether you want to add before I give the option to members to interact with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So, just to reiterate that
the Financial and Fiscal Commission is actually your arm. It's a tool for this portfolio committee. So when you come here, we're coming here to point to assist you when you exercise an oversight on and so our input should be understood in the context that this is a tool for the portfolio committee, which is pointing us to areas to focus on when we do our oversight on the department. And then also just to reiterate that the other process, which is bigger, the report that we've done around rural development in IGFR, is being processed as part of all of government response, and that will come when the Minister of Finance tables the budget in February. There should be a all of government response to the specific recommendations that the Commission has made in May on how national levels revenue should be divided across the three spheres so that it responds sharply to rural development mandate.
I'm seeing another some information on the recommendations that you've made.
Yes, Chair, we just extracted some of the recommendations for the portfolio for the portfolio committee. We are not going to speak to them today because they are being handled as part of the process around the Division of Revenue Act and the department in consultation with Ministry of Finance in the process of giving its responses to those recommendations. But we just wanted the portfolio committee to know what we with around some of the key recommendations. So it's for information purposes.
Thank you very much, Chair Members, to just look at those recommendations. Are the members getting to the presentation?
Before I continue, I can just ask yourself, given what the input that we've received, given that this is in effect a tool of the committee to direct questions to the department, well after this meeting, will we have the opportunity to engage with the department using the recommendations and the assessment of specifically the performance targets to interact with the department? Because it would be difficult to ask of this body to ask them, you know, questions, for example, why is there only 11% of the total target of allocating hectares to farm dwellers and labour tenants? It's not the body that's going to answer those questions. What I do think is I accept the, in fact, I find it highly informative, empathizing with a lot of concerns that we've raised in the past in this committee. So logically, to me, the people that the questions need to be asked for is not here in this room. So my question to you would be, will the department itself, given these findings, given these recommendations, will they be here to respond?
I think the DG is the accounting officer here. Perhaps can respond to some of the issues which are related to the department and responsibilities.
Chair, I would accept the answer that you've given that it should be directed to the DG. I'm concerned that it will not do justice with only the DG here, because there's lots of other entities also being mentioned, probably from the Amma Trust to various entities and what would the expression be? Sections within the programs within the departments. I'm concerned that we're not going to get those answers here. So Chair, I'm just going to, because one can respond to each one of these performance assessments, and one can also look at all the recommendations being raised here. One can also link this up to the AG interactions that we had in previous weeks. But the key concern, again, seems to be that we are unable to monitor real outcomes. We are unable to, and if I can maybe describe an outcome that is the DA said we would like to see is the extension of property rights rapidly and successfully to previously disadvantaged individuals, to ensure also as part of an exercise of broadening the farming base, the food security base, and the profitability in the end of agriculture, especially given the importance that agriculture has in generating jobs. I don't think it's that different from what other political parties also want to see. We want to see successful land reform. We want to see more black South Africans owning land. We want the property regime or the property structure in land in South Africa. We want that to reflect all the talents in South Africa, all the contributions that can be made. So if we are sitting firstly with a departmental structure that is hamstrung with funds being misdirected by inter alia things like disciplinaries and vacancies, there's concerns obviously regarding the overall administration. I think it also links up with whether the department is working in silos, in a silo from other departments and also provincial governments. So it's also been alluded to in the report. There's concerns with the monitoring of outputs, but we don't, for example, know why targets in terms of real outcomes, like property ownership, like transfer of property, why that is not being achieved. We need that central to us being able to monitor what this department is doing. And then also, and again, I don't want to I can spend an hour just talking to what's been presented here. But generally speaking, you get the impression from this report, it's quite a damning report of fiscal dumping to achieve targets rather than to achieve output targets rather than to achieve the outcomes that we want to achieve. It's very simple. Where there's a court finding also directing our money should be used in terms of dealing with the backlog of land claims. What's the progress on that specifically? That's what we need to meet. A lot of these dates seem to be also earlier this year, before the court finding, what's the information that we're getting. So what's the progress on that? That's what I want to know from the department. What is the progress in terms of the backlog for restitution? How much land...
Sorry to disrupt you. Can I make a comment? Sorry. Yeah. Can I make a question? That relates to the presentation by LSC, if they want clarity, but I think we need to have time with the department where we raise all what you are raising. Because now, you know, we talk about these things, people talking, but we have enough time to engage the department in this report.
Chairman, I'll just clarify something. Chairperson, that is exactly what I would like to see. If we can have a proper engagement with the department, to me this presentation is very clear. I have no questions of clarity. What I would like to do, what I would like to suggest, and it seems to be your suggestion, Chair, as well, that we have a proper engagement using this report. We can also incorporate the AG report, some of the other recommendations that we received, and we have the department here answering some of these concerns, and then look into it in a more targeted, specific manner. But and then my input is really, I thank the Commission for its very informative report.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I wish to welcome and thank the Commission for this presentation. Indeed, this is a very important tool that we need to utilize extensively. I just wish to ask, I think that the slide 6, for where you outline the person of 2011 statistics with regard to the differences between food prices in the urban and the rural areas. I want to know, I mean, you indicate here in the slide that the food expenditure is higher in the rural households than in the urban households. But it does not actually indicate that you are saying that food prices is more, is higher in the rural areas than in the urban areas. Because you did make the example that the food are produced in the rural areas. They're exported to the urban areas, so one would expect that if you add the transport cost, then there may be a justification for higher prices in the urban area. But in this case, it's not that. So my thinking here is that it's perhaps in the rural areas more expenditure is on food than in the urban areas. In the urban areas, people in other areas who spend their money on it. You know, so I'm not quite sure whether I'm understanding you this message correctly. It is not so much the cost of the food. It is that in rural areas, more is spent actually on food than in the urban areas where you look at dram, you look at your all those kind of things that you buy instead of just a food. That's what I would wish to have clarity on. And then you also referred to the bigger report, which you say will only be unveiled in the budget in March, February, towards the end of February. Yeah. I have now tried to look at your website to see maybe I can get a glance at this important report, but I am unable to see it there, but I would appreciate it if we can have access to it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and once again, thank you very much for the report. Honourable Waters has given our holistic approach or our holistic thoughts on this report. I do have a couple of questions, though, more questions of clarity, ranging from the earlier reports, the earlier pages in the report where we speak of statistics that have been concluded by 2011 Stats SA. I'm just wondering, is there nobody that can do statistics on an annual basis, especially pertinent to these outcomes or to these findings? To work on a stat that came out in 2011, quite a lot has changed since 2011. I know unemployment has exploded. So that's my first question on that. You made an interesting remark on page 9 with regards to beneficiaries that are worse off post becoming beneficiaries than what they were beforehand. I'd like you just to explain that to me, please, and how that is possible. I think it is pertinent, and it all falls into the subject of unemployment, it all falls into the subject of rural development, and possibly what errors there are. I'm just going to go through the pages for pages here. On page 14, you've mentioned that page 16, where on restitution of regional offices is increased by 3%. Now, I don't know if I'm understanding this properly. Now that the court case has been, the condemning court case has been mentioned with regards to the extension of the land claim, that 3% is that going to be channeled back into doing verification for beneficiaries prior or claimants prior 1998? Is that a possibility? I hope I'm not talking Greek here. I think for now that is all. I just want to also allude to the drought you say there's the worst drought in 30 years. Maybe the departments of rural development can work with departments of DAP with regards to increasing capacity for water storage, especially in areas where we've got the one family, 1 hectare policy, where the guys really, really need irrigation to possibly build earth dams or succession storage facilities to actually accommodate poorer guys with that, so at least they can farm for sustenance. And that's about it. If I pick anything else up, I'll ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's rather disappointing that the department doesn't really appear to be ready to respond to questions which we would obviously have loved to put to them. The absence of the minister and his deputy, and sorry to say it, DG, the language of the body language of the DG is what makes me feel worse. Because with the questions that have been put, I don't know if he's taken note of them. You know, maybe he's writing them on his phone. I don't know. But one would love to get the impression that the department has come ready to respond to what we want to put. But I know that some people like to write on their phones. Anyway, for these questions, if FFC feel that they are in a position to respond, they would. If the department feels that it is their call, they will respond. Some of them are borderline cases. The first one is on slide 6, that's on page 3. Why is it that rural development is so slow in rural areas compared with the urban areas? I feel that FFC should be able to answer this because this is their finding. I don't remember seeing this in the departmental report. So if you make it as a statement, you must have done some research, you know, as to why you come up with the statement. The second question is on slide 8. What is being done to address this policy uncertainty, according to your findings? We would still expect the department also to indicate if they are in a position to, as to why, you know, as to how it is addressing this policy uncertainty, because it is definitely having a negative impact. Still on slide 8, these 50,000 people who are said to have gone poorer as a result of the drought, have they been identified? Can one walk into a given home in a given province and say, we found that you got poorer as a result of the drought? Because I fear a situation where we could put all the blame on natural factors when in fact there is a general decline in the standards of living of people, you know, because we haven't been having a very exciting reports in the recent past, but it looks like rural development as well as Garden of Agriculture and Forestry seem to put so much blame on the drought, you know, for people who are getting, who have gotten poor in the last 12 months or so. And that's why I want to know if they have been identified, and if so, how many per province? We've listed some provinces there. And slide 9, what is the apparent reason? It's the same matter that my colleague, you know, raised, but I'm putting it differently. I've got different interests in it about the reform beneficiaries who have gone poorer than non-beneficiaries. What is the apparent reason for that? Because there must be some reason why, you know. And what is it, in which way have they become poorer? Did they become poorer socially? Did they become poorer financially? You know, did they become poorer because they've had to unlearn certain skills which had helped them to be where they were, and when they became beneficiaries, maybe they were taught to unlearn certain skills and to learn certain skills. And so when you do not come to terms with the new skills, you can say, I don't know what to do because the old method has been condemned, now I'm in no man's land. That's why I want to know exactly in which way do you say they have become poorer. This is your statement as FFC. It's not a statement of the department. What have you defined, you know, identified? And well, this one would be for the department on slide 24. Why only 40% achieved by the department in so far as filling in the posts and second last check? What is being on slide 25? What is being done by the department about these poor research reports on land restitution? Someone might recall that I criticized the report of the restitution here last week and said it was too scanty. They were not identifying any structural, systemic, or operational problems or challenges. It was just figures being dished out for us to deal with. And these are the issues that one would have expected to have been raised by them. But they seem to want to give us year in and year out the impression that all is well. They're able to spend their 2 billion smooth and slow. Only thing is that they don't quite achieve, you know, what they would have loved to, only because of the budget. Now we're seeing here, we're being given a different picture, that there are some problems, you know, with research, quality of the research. Something I do not recall them, you know, highlighting to us. And that is why we would love to know now what is being done about this revelation to person as it is. Lastly, Chair, on slide 26, why only 11% success rate on land transfers to farm dwellers and labor tenants, given its potential negative impact on the ESTA bill we are so busy with, because this would really help to alleviate the problem we're facing, with which the department has asked us to legislate on in order to alleviate the problem, or rather ameliorate the condition of the farm dwellers. Now, if a solution that the department had in its hand is a matter of policy, doesn't seem to be having appreciable success rate, then one obviously wants to know why only 11% success rate. I thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Members. Requested to members that we ask the FFC questions for clarity. They will have a day when the department will come before us and ask the questions that members ask that are related to the department, and to further indicate that last week when we received a presentation from the department, there was an indication when members looking at their report that there's a delay with regards to the research reports that are supposed to be submitted by service provider. So we asked the department some questions with regards to that, just to remind members that there was an indication of that challenge, because we have asked them what means are being put in place, because that institution, even members proposed that why can't they take the graduates which have done research and use them to do the research, instead of the service providers who are still putting us, who are creating problems for us. But just, you can just park those questions and wait for the day when you call the department. You can use the right to ask them the same questions.
Thanks to the question. You have taken this from and this is that, you know, we, in the last meetings we engaged with the department, and lots of questions that are, some of them are asked by the FFC, and some of the issues that we raised were asked by the AG. And I can't remember who asked what question, but what is important is that as a committee, not as individuals, we have raised a number of issues with the department. It's not like there is no oversight here. We're doing the best we can. But I think it would have been nicer if the presentation we're making, you made it either before or at the same time with the AG, and when the department was here. We would have saved a lot of time, and I think we would have achieved more than what we'll achieve later, you know, in our next meeting. Things being as they are, I think there's nothing we can do about it. The tools that were provided for by institutions supporting democracy are very sharp tools. I take the FFC's documents as something that I treat like the constitution when I go to meetings. I leave a piece of the constitution with me. And I think that when we have our committee meeting, this analysis will help us even more. There are just some few things that, particularly in terms of reasons why things were not done. And overview, I don't remember what the slide number is, but there's something where you talk about claimant, poor claimant. After our interventions, people and prostitution, instead of their lives changing, their lives become even worse than they were before. And there have been a lot of theories on what causes this. Coming from Limpopo, where there have been lots of restituted land, for instance, collapsing. But the reason is not because the claimants are not interested in agriculture. It is not because they are lazy or they fight over the farm manager's house. But it's because of the interventions that we make happens many years after the agreements were made. And once a claim is cassetted, no landowner can do any developments on their land without looking to the claimants. And this raises the hope of the claimants. They actually see themselves having passed the River Jordan. I belong to the Apostolic Church, so the River Jordan means something else. It's not in the Middle East. According to us, it's somewhere. So we see ourselves having crossed that river. And once you're on the other side, you realize that it was actually better on the other side than where we are now. And that's mostly because when the claim is gazetted, we as the department, in most cases, we find that there is no clear asset register of what are the assets on the farm. This is a common business. And when the land is transferred, before we even pay, we don't check the register if the assets that were there 2 years ago are still in good order. And after paying, when people step on the land, they realize that you can't even pump water because the water pump is stolen, mistaken. What you see on the ground, it's like a pump that is working. But when you open that thing, it's just a shell. The real machine is taken, and who would have taken that machine? Because by that time, the land was under the care of the farmer during that period. So the general claim is that then we say, no, we're giving people land, and people are failing to use the land, and they end up, you know. And people will fight over the farm manager's house because that is the only asset that is working. Because the farmer will be still staying in the house before the money is transferred. So let us not blame the claimants. I think there is much that the department can do to ensure that you've got to double check the asset register before and the asset register during the time of the transfer. It happens again even on farms where there are animals. It's not people come in there and then they are having parties and having prices with it. People have been living with animals for very many years. And because of African beliefs, I'll say African beliefs because many people who are dispossessed from the land are African people. We have our own totems, which means if your territory is a springboard, you can leave taboo to eat as well as springboard. But then you'll have people whose totem is a springboard. And you go that farm, you'll never even find a single springboard. But just 3 months before the settlement of the plague, there were lots of them on the farm. So the people we deal with are actually thieves. The farmers, people that we buy land from. Because just before the transfer, or on the day of the transfer, they will fly over the farm and drive animals off after cutting the fence. And next thing you check after 3 months, there's not even a single impala. But there were more than 300 before. How can people consume 300 impalas in 2 months? It's not possible. So we are dealing with this.
I'll leave that just a little bit on this thing.
Honorable Chamberlain's professional opinion, what he's talking about, that farmers are thieves, was just the general basis in which he's talking, first of all. That's what he's coming to answer.
It's okay. I want to move on to the issue of food prices in rural areas, the difference of food prices of food. I'll say it is in the system. The system we live in under makes it possible that other people will grow the food, because the food is owned by those who got money. Food growers are people with money, commercial farmers and all. I'm not talking about subsistence farmers, people who grow like on a bound marginal land. I'm talking about the real farmers. Limpopo will produce lots of tomato in the area from that too. And the tomatoes are produced in Middleton. They are attracted to Johannesburg. And they come back as tomato sauce. And that tomato sauce is very angry. Those people can't even identify with that tomato sauce. It's not the same tomatoes that they planted just some 3 months ago in the village. So is this the near alienation from, you know, what you produce and then what you consume at the later stage are total strangers. But I think there's something that we can do with that as government, like for instance, you know, put moratorium on basic food increases in rural areas. If we say the kilogram of maize should not exceed this amount, and anyone found selling it at that amount would have, I mean, in a rural area would have committed a crime. What is wrong in us doing that? Why can't we, as a department, even suggest that we have government shops that will sell those basic foodstuffs, you know, papa, maize, meal, mosho for those who eat the mosho, you know? And then, you know, I think some of these things are doable, but it will definitely need the buying in of big business in South Africa to help us go through this. But and the last one from me is on the drought and the effect of the drought, and why is this drought hitting us? The drought is hitting us badly because, according to me, the interventions that we make in rain harvesting are not informed by the material conditions that we live in, particularly in this part of Africa, where there's, you know, rainfall is minimal. And now with global warming, it's actually going to get worse before it gets better, if it is to get better in it. But I think our rain harvesting strategies too are informed by big business, big engineering companies that make dams. How do you build a big dam in the Limpopo area towards the Musina area, so the where temperatures rise all the time? It's more than 35 degrees. You are stirring this water so that it will evaporate again. And we lose most of it to evaporation and siltation because of poor management of the catchment areas of rivers and dams. And this takes more than rural development. It needs the Department of Environment. You need other rural players, including agriculture, the method we use when we plant the land will have effects on what we, where we store our water. Because then the topsoil will end up filling the dam. You've got more silt than water in the dam. There will be other ways, for instance, that would be cheaper, where we don't need very serious engineering wells that cost billions of dollars, where we can be able to make interventions, for instance, create wetlands, green lands in dry areas by facilitating filtration of water to the ground table through the aquifers. I've seen it in other countries where people would dig holes, fill them with rocks, fill them again, and when it rains, the water gets trapped and the groundwater table rises. And that cannot even be affected by whatever amount of heat that rises in that of temperature. So the method we use end up having negative effects on our strategic intentions of having water every day for everybody and sustaining it over for posterity. Thank you.
I also like listening, so it was as if my colleagues and the last one in the first chair could keep on talking and talking about the good points he was raising, Chair. Chair, I join colleagues in welcoming the report. There will only be one query, and then the rest appreciation of the points raised. The query is, Chair, I've entitled FFC before at provincial level. They send commissioners and the accounting officer, like Honorable Ziz cited the absence of the minister and deputy, because the executing authority is the accounting person to parliament. I'm not saying the accounting officer, but he's the accounting person to parliament. In the last committee sitting, I did quote from the constitution on that. Similarly, FFC, please try your best to bring us the principals, the commissioners. Because a lot of your work is about also lobbying, also understanding the balance of forces. And if you like, some spoke that I would think from where I sit that it needs them to hear it. But thanks for your good work. Absolutely. You presented the work. You didn't say these are other people's work with Chairman Paul. But it makes sense. We could add chairs and you bring the commissioners as well, you know. Particularly because of the strategic nature of FFC. I don't know if you have ever felt so proud about it. I'm so unqualified. I would have loved to join FFC if and when I retire in politics. It's very, very, very strategic. Very, very, very important. There might be other institutions supporting Democrats that are still in the limelight in the media, but the work you are doing is absolutely strategic and marvelous. And thank you for that, Dr. Mabuba. I wish I was in your shoes. There's no hope in under the sun that I'll ever have a title like yours, so don't feel threatened. So thank you, FFC, but please bring commissioners next time. Please bring commissioners and say expressly, we ask for the commissioner. And then you will be there in their background, you know, then whom are then present the report. Chair, I want to get quickly to the point. Thank you for the information on slide 5, for instance, the poverty indices. Other people don't believe it. I was in the Eastern Cape Station. I used to tell them, everyone, no department, I checked two departments, no one wanted to believe me that the eastern side of the Eastern Cape is poorer than the western side. And here, this rural urban, this 86, 68, 31, speaks it all. You can go down to a municipal level, you know. Again, the second point on rural versus in terms of the reduction of poverty. You know, this is compelling. This is highly political. I'm a politician. I'm charged up and fired up that we don't want to see this recurring. We just don't. We don't want to see this recurring. And absolutely not. Yeah. Perhaps you could complete that slide, because you're researchers, you capacity people.
by looking at government expenditure per capita, is that the word to mean per person? And taking an ordinary rural boy and taking an ordinary urban boy and see how much of government is going. I did have a talk to Dr. Motsoaledi, with Dr. Motsoaledi, and he was showing me this, the flip side of the fees must fall when it comes to health. That in actual fact, medical aids cover 80% of the elites, and therefore health budget goes unsuspectingly to most of us, to the rich. But the rich on the other side are letting strongly on the fees must fall. Like I'm a commissioner, I don't know if you think I'm politicizing you. That's only like me. But I'm just saying, Doctor, perhaps that per capita expenditure by government, so that your portfolio on rural development knows exactly that, government is spending, if you like, per annum. He's spending 50,000 on a rural boy, and he's spending 200,000 on an urban boy. He's got a bridge, he's got an elite school with an aircon, with what, and the rural boy has none of those. He's standing under the tree, there's no clinic, there's nothing, you know. So please, would you complete that for us kindly? I think we're playing for the same team. But kindly, if you could, also the private sector. Because somewhere in your recommendations, you do the nice thing. You are saying private sector must be roped to go, and you put in nice language there, into the rural areas, which I know we call it redlining. They redline the rural areas where there's no media, there's no art. If the Transnet sponsored school, it will be in urban, and it must show on TV and all that. So it's not even private sector or Transnet, you know. How much more for private sector, pure DBS, Anglo, whatever, you know. I don't know about good times. I'm just talking about the private sector, the well established. Good times are part of that also. I talk everything. That insofar as the background information, and I thank you and wish, drive the point home so that you arm us to take your wishes forward. You know? That was my first point. Thank you. On slide 13. You write when you say also on that dotted point that land reform, restitution, and rural development. You fell short a little bit of your colleagues in HFRC. HFRC then took out the rural development part. Because you have only settlement and restitution. So once off, we said you, Babun Kuruako, and did 3 hectares, fine, we said you, and we're gone. I'm not saying, maybe I'm over simplifying it. But rural development is a holistic thing, also from within the department itself, DG. Rural development, HFRC says it's declining over the years. I tried to interpret your bar chart there, and I thought I cannot disprove HFRC. That color like lemon moss is the one. You see in 2015 where it was, but can you see projection is going to go down? In that line of 20%, it's going below 20%. So one would have wished that beyond generally land reform, restitution, and rural development, but in particular rural development, which is what was the launching pad on the background page, rural development in particular. Bangles, Garden, Bangani, Obalambi, Amtukwas, the people in rural areas, job, I know you not here, my name is the people in rural areas are very, very needy. They need so would you check your notes with what I'm projecting as an HFRC reflection that the budget seems to be declining? Because you are the budget guys, but political budget, if you like, from what I see. So perhaps if you recognize that, then in your interventions you would seek to have a remedy. And just in passing, now that the DG is here, I'm always unfair to him, but he always understands me. I like the page on slide 21. You talk about achieved and not achieved. Because the DG is going to report to the department now that Unguni Upadre Nguni has discovered a reporting format where there's no partially achieved. Thank you. Because partially achieved is not achieved. Yeah? Yeah, partial achieved is not achieved. Usually when we get reports, when we get reports, there's even a third category of partially achieved. It blurs the line, you know. It blurs the line. We never like it, some of us. And thank you, your lines are clear here. Achieved or not achieved. I'm not saying the department doesn't respond. They usually respond and explain. There's sometimes work in progress. You are in here and so forth. But I like being cut and dried, clear. I'm doing my best to move very, very fast. Thank you for the reporting formats. We've raised it, and at some point we've been asked by the department to please give them the formats. I think on page 25 you are saying exactly that, on slide 25. You are saying it's not smart, it's not measurable. Some of the indicators I got, some of the indicators out of the program could be more specific. In professional language, the practitioners call it SMART, S-M-A-R-T, in block letters, which can be broken down to small measures, SMART, specific, measurable, accurate, and so forth, right? So you made examples there of what is not SMART. We have picked it up, so we have colleagues in us or allies in us, because we also picked it up that the things are not SMART, and we have warm, nice, friendly fights with the department about the reporting format that hide or do not explicitly expose the information we want, you know. So you made examples in slide 25, and the good director general who's in charge of everyone and every other director there in that department is here, is going to tell his directors to please make things smart, because up on the committee now, even the FFC is picking up that the indicators are not smart. And Chair, my last batch is on recommendation. Thank you so much, gentlemen and ladies. Also, the assistant. No. I really look at you as guys, sorry, and ladies. You see, on recommendations, you're doing wonderful work. Thank you. I'm on record here, Chair, as having said, that what is rural development? And I'm not going to quote somebody else in case you feel aware wrong. Somebody on the other side, help me to also say, hey, I also agree with Ngunu, what is rural development? And I will carry your thing in the Bible also, because I had a small party when people were leaving province coming to national, and people were saying, they help us with rural development, and I had a homework, what is rural development? So I think under your recommendations, you begin to give us a framework of what rural development could mean. There's a clear vision here. It's clear. And I want to emphasize your bullet point to a province. We call it a costed norms approach. I don't know if it's the one there. Bullet point to where you talk in the last line, applicable national norms and standards on access to infrastructure. Because if one block in rural areas, including transportation, is about 850. It might be 5 rand in urban areas, or even 650 in urban areas. So the rural person pays more, whatever, the transport. A sick person running to the doctor in rural areas must have 2 hours drive if there's transport at all. In urban areas, however poor, in every street, almost a doctor's surgery. So the costed norms approach, we emphasize, please stick to that in your continuing your work and lobbying. We talk on the opposite page 33 on clear and simple rural development that is clear and simple to categorize. Fujitsu would agree, we've been talking to highly learned people and saying they must simplify and make things clear. So you're highly learned, but you also agree with us. Things must be clear and simple. I'm reading there. Thank you. And your last bullet point there on the slide 32 talks about rural development research agenda. The committee has, again, very close to your talk about perhaps a qualification on rural development. You call it rural development research agenda. We think that there should be a dedicated qualification, starting from a bare minimum of what is called NARIFEC. A NARIFEC graduate should be able one day to not go with the DG when you retire DG after 15 years. To be a DG, a NARIFEC graduate should go on and get into this in my time, technical diploma and what postgrad up until that person. So the new rural development research agenda, my dear chair, I'm very excited about that concept. I'm just lobbying FFC. Please encapsulate in your conception of it our idea of a qualification dedicated to rural development and land reform, if you like. It could have majors, could become an academic thing. But the research agenda, I know what you are referring to. I'm not clapping it unfairly, but I'm saying alongside it, yes, and as part of it. Again, Chair, I agree with you, Chair, that you're saying maybe department will meet them, and we met the FFC slightly later, but we have another some more financial aid and quotas coming. Because their FFC on grade point 2 on 34, you talk about rather than the relatively blanket approach to allocation, you should have heard us arguing. There were 27 there were 27 agri-parks. All of a sudden, there was then, no, put this cake in one bucket, cut it into 44 equals. You see, it's not acceptable. And you are correct here. Some of us thought maybe we were intellectual dwarf. Blanket approach to allocation is not, it's not an option. So thank you for elaborating our point in much more explicit intellectual terms. There should be no blanket approach to allocation. Irongo, the one who is short of 2 and the one who is short of 3, if you just allocate blanketly, then you perpetuate the inequality. So thank you, no blanket approach, but equitable approach. I don't know if you wrote the word somewhere. The correct word should be equitable, which means you reaffirm the undertrodden one. And why you not so also not neglecting the any other one, right? Chair, on 35, you spoke about gaps in the land reform program. I think that please, as you lobby the points around the government, incorporate from where I sit the rollout of SPLUMA, Special Planning and Land Use Management Act. It has now got regulations. But you don't feel its impact. I experience every day when I reach home land invasions. And I don't think that we're very clear how SPLUMA rollout will arrest. Because it means every square meter of land will be plentiful. So there's no space for land invasion. But so where are the budget and the necessary tools and human resource to deal with it, right? Definitely, like this is, I've said, sacrifice other than just come to second last. Price of products in rural areas, ironically, when there are people who are producing agriculture in their proximity, good language of the doctor, you're dead right, that's like 36 at a job. I just developed it next to it, I developed a point. Perhaps propose to us more about agro-processing. Because you see these raw peaches that will produce at Mount Elif. But now they must go and be canned and processed in, let's say, Perienekre. Clearly, when they come back, they will be more expensive and almost not realizable. In Singizi, in Zimkulu, people will have timber. But once it goes and comes back as furniture, to be not accessible to others. But with agro-processing and manufacturing in rural area, probably the alienation, yeah, you see Marxist terms, we call it alienation. The alienation is caused by agro-processing and manufacturing being done elsewhere. When that product comes up, it's not accessible to the ordinary people. And for debate, I wanted to engage you on the, I wrote it as property tax in rural areas. That's on page of the slide 38, your first bullet point, it ends with such a text. And then I found myself debating. And I think it's not an easily winnable one, that one. If you introduce property tax in rural areas, I don't know. Perhaps you could then have a barometer to say mansions and big business in rural areas. But generally, this is what Amakhosi campaigned on against local government and the world to war local government. They said, no. They want to introduce the municipalities in our area, then there's going to be in rates and so on. So I don't know that point. Maybe you want to clarify. I could be connected with that. Chair, I would have loved to have been short, but I just felt the engagement point for FFC needs to get so that there are points for debate and for fine-tuning. Some you may wish to respond to, some you may just wish to note, and some I may definitely be, I like Africans, verdual, I may just be going way out of line, so bear with me. Can there be a law to limit price, variation? This bottle of water probably costs about 10 rand. I buy garages wherever I travel long distances every week. It's about 10 rand. Why must this bottle of water in another area be 16 rand? And in another area be 10 rand? Can't, maybe it's coming back to us, but also you can make clear recommendations to make sure that the same product cannot have a price variance of more than, if you like I said here, 10%. If it's 10 rand elsewhere, the most it must go anywhere must be 11 rand. How often do I always talk to this gentleman, I'm frustrated, the car broken down. He says, no, parts are cheap in Watwa. So if you buy the same part of a car, it's double elsewhere. So maybe it talks back to us, that one, Chair.
Thank you very much, I think issues that have been raised by members, some of them are comments, then some were doubts.
Chairperson, it's just a concern that without taking away from the comments made by members, look, I think people are entitled to raise their views, and I think we're also all comfortable to disagree with one another. I'm concerned that we are not focusing on the report that's been put in front of us, which is actually very specific where there's areas of concern regarding the department and regarding the area where the portfolio committee should be covering. Now, if we get into arguments, anecdotal arguments about thieves, impact of drought, ideological, the matter raised by Member Chamberlain, I'm not, there's that type of thing taking place, obviously the department can deal with it, I'm not disputing that. My point is this, if we are going to have this commission answering comments that is of an anecdotal or an ideological nature, then we're going to drift away from the point, the purpose of the meeting here. And I also think we mustn't distract our attention away from this report and the questions we should be asking to the department when they come to meet us. And Chairperson, I would also like to ask you if it's possible to set a date for when the department will be answering these questions. Thank you very much.
I think as the chair, together with the support staff, we'll look at the program, develop a draft program of the committee. Then that program must be adopted by this committee, because there are other outstanding activities that are supposed to be considered. Then this one of the FFC and the Auditor General's proposed by members will also be considered following other outstanding issues that are still on the table.
There's an English saying that says those who live in stone houses should not throw glasses.
Okay,
it could be the other way around. English is my 14th language. But it says those who live in glass houses should not throw stones. You started earlier, and I just kept quiet. I never said objection to anything, because I take it that a debate is a discussion we learn from one another. You know, we are not supposed to be scoring points against each other. We're supposed to share whatever little knowledge we have, you know, so that we focus on you know, contributing towards making the department better. And if the department is functioning better,
the people down there in my village where I come from, they will feel the rippling effects of these interventions. I hope to feel this in the next 2 years, that we get, you know, that what we discuss here will benefit my people within less than 2 years that I've been spending in this parliament. And as a politician, yeah, I'm governed by a lot of things, and amongst them is ideology. I'm an ideological animal, and I belong to a party that is an ideology. Maybe some parties have memorandums of association, but we are governed by, And you cannot say I should not be ideological. I put you here all the time. We're discussing ideologies here.
Honorable members,
they cannot only object to this.
Honorable Chairman, what I'm requesting to honorable members, can we be focused on the presentation?
That's what I want to do. I'm requesting the presentation.
That is why I try to separate the questions that you'll be asking the department and also the questions or comments to the FFC. Please assist me. Let us be focused on the presentation. Honorable Pony, then last with the Honorable Robertson.
All I will appeal for in my point of order is just fairness. It will never be fair. I will ask that commission now to answer directly. To talk about financial allocations, financial strategy, outside the context of draft, that drought that the Honorable Chabeleng raised. Drought is a reality. You can even call the World Conference on Drought. Drought is not political. It's not. If you talk drought, you don't then get allowed to join the ANC because they are comrade. Drought, an honorable member who raised the issue, he recited drought that it should not be quoted or contextualized. I really guess, Chair. I really guess.
You and I would happen again.
I really guess.
Chairperson, the whole purpose of my comment, giving due recognition right up front to the right of members to raise their concerns, raise all their points of view. I've never said people should, I've never heard that people should not raise their particular perspective. That's why we here, we learn from one another. I said that right up front. You know, if you listened, you would have heard that. The concern that I have is that, I said it very clearly, Chairperson, my concern is that we should not allow a distraction from the poor governance issues that are raised by this commission. That was the point that I made, which aligns to the point that you made, Chairperson, that we must keep the meeting focused. And then, of course, I'm very happy with your answer that the department will be coming in to answer the issues of governance that were raised. So I'm quite happy, Chairperson, if you allow it, that we engage in an ideological debate, that we engage on the issues of policy that we emerge. Right up front, you, Chair, made a ruling that is not the purpose of this meeting. So I actually raised that concern. I could have done it as a point of order, but I didn't want to interrupt any of the other speakers. I actually raised my point in support of your earlier meeting that we keep the meeting focused. But if this is going to continue, Chair, I'm quite happy to engage in a debate using these facts, having an ideological discourse at the same time. It will be entertaining, I'm sure, but that's not the purpose of this meeting. But I'm happy. If you want to, you can do so.
Members, I've requested you from the beginning that let's focus on this presentation. There will be time for us to engage the department on the issues that have been raised by the FFC, so that we can move on to other reports, please.
Chair, thank you. I guess it can only be fair, Chair, that when members raise points, they expect a response. It's called audi alteram patem. That's really legal and objective.
there cannot be a situation where people raise points and those points are not responded to. Nor should we have the old order that certain people must have the last say by all means possible. Chair, I was listening attentively. Drought was raised as one of the issues that are like peripheral to the presentation. And I dare challenge everyone in the room, and it was not raised by me good enough, so I'm speaking quite relatively objectively. I can ask everyone in the room if drought should not factor in it. And climatic conditions that, like Honorable Chamberlain raised about building a dam informed by the needs of big engineers and capitalists, and then building a dam where all the heat in that province is going to evaporate that dam. These were great, great points about infrastructure outlays and so forth. Now, I think that it cannot be fair. It can never be fair. That's why I kept my hand up still. It can never be fair that people raise points to which there should be no response, including my point. There cannot be a situation where we are silenced. We will never agree to be silenced in a democratic dispensation. And lastly, Chair, the ideological issue that members are wishing for, they must wait for us to raise ideological discussion. They will sit in the stands. But safe to say, it's up to you if this bottle is half full or it's half empty. And no crime for those who see it as half empty, because you're merely looking at one dimension on the empty space here, and then you say then it's half empty. But to another person, it's half full. Chair, every value is ideological. It projects a certain point of view, and we should tolerate. We tolerate colleagues who sympathize with a certain dispensation, and we also sympathize with another dispensation. A new society that doesn't exist and must still be created. It must still be created. There are no borders here. We cannot accept past cup mentality here. We cannot accept.
Chairperson, on a point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to raise the point of order again, if we are once again drifting off away from the report in front of us. So if we could just maybe calm everything down. And I have a question to ask regarding to the report. I'd like to be able to ask.
Chairperson,
I
also have a question.
Can you ask that question?
Chair, I also have a point of order. Chairperson, I appreciate, in fact, I look forward to this type of debate. I appreciate, I don't mean it genuinely. But if we're going to this committee, whenever we under pressure, start reverting to racial imagery, starting to insult fellow members of this committee, saying things like mentality of boss cup and never having the old order when there was never on the table for discussion, then I'm suggesting to you, first of all, this meeting is getting out of order, and secondly, there is frankly an attitude emerging that is contrary to the constitutional order that we have here in Parliament, and contrary to the rules of Parliament as well. So if I can ask you to caution Member Gooney when he makes remarks like that. Thank you very much.
Why must you have enough to?
Honorable Robertson.
We know each other too well, Honorable
Chair. Can I take this opportunity and give it to FST? Because now, you know, we have to listen to you members instead of being listening to the FST.
I have a question. Please.
Questions?
I have pertinent to the presentation. I did ask.
Can you add those questions so that give FST time to respond?
Thank you very much. Back to the point. Thank you very much for indulging us politicians in what's just happened. Page 22, 26, 25. All issues, if I could start with page 22, the Auditor General raised the following matters. No daily or monthly internal controls in place leading to the material misstatements that were subsequently corrected. Below that, information system weaknesses. You'll see that point over there. On page 25, again, issues of the restitution. And then on page 26, finally, where it says under land reform, the department has overachieved by 33% on smallholders. However, it is unclear whether these allocation is on lease only basis or if it is also involves the transfer of ownership of land. I just want to ask the gentleman that the sir that opened up the discussion. Sorry, I don't know your name. When you opened up the discussion, you said that we should be taking the reports from 2014, 2015 and matching them to 2015, 2016 to see if a pattern emerges. I want to know, first of all, what is, in your opinion, is there a pattern that you guys have picked up? What is that pattern? And then I would just like to know that these issues that are brought on page 25, 22, 25 and 26, if they have been mentioned before in the last annual report, just to see if there is, in fact, a pattern that's taking place and nothing's been done about it. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. You see, it speaks
very well. Thank you, Honourable Robertson, not Honourable King. I'm notified that the MFP has got another meeting at our first one. So can I then take this opportunity to just give to the MFP to just briefly respond on some of your questions raised, but others were comments.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Dr. Because Kenny said Honorable Robertson, so maybe also say I'm not Dr. Ramos, I'm Dr. Mabua.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members, for the active discussion and engagement. We'll address some of the questions and the ones that we can address for our customers. Addressed today, but point to some other work that we've done that speaks to a particular issue. Now, starting with the first set of questions, and I think that three around the role cost of living for basic foodstuffs, rental is the number of the other questions. And what's happening here, if you remember Victor, is that it's not only the share of food expenditure that I involve in as compared to non-rural areas, but now actually the cost of the market of that food service is higher in rural areas compared to non-rural areas. And when we have engaged around this finding, I think one of the most worrying ones that I would like to raise for the portfolio committee is much more the engagement we have with food nutritionists who point to the aspect that when you look at nutrition in rural areas, it's migrating or moving away from the past when we used to be more dependent on non-processed foods to more processed foods. And that's an aspect that nutritionists actually wanted to raise as the big problem that is coming out of this particular statistic. Focus more on how we address the shift in nutritional content for rural areas. And in fact, from a nutritional point of view, it turns out that what we were doing in the past, relying more on the less processed food that we are doing now, was healthier. And is an aspect we want to push from a health perspective, well-being perspective, than what we're seeing when we're letting the market or test sex industries. So that's the aspect that we think long-term, we think for the community should also one more about how we address the nutritional areas. Then in terms of bigger submission, I think parliamentary liaison officer has got copies of the report, and I'll ask him to come and give each member a copy of that report. So no need to go to the website or go to the papers or bring back copies. And coming to the, I'll just take some as the communication. The Honorable Robertson, you started about inquiring whether the 2011 data is old, is there is something that is more up to date. The answer is the article that you, I'm always in monthly analysis. But the reason for relying on 2011 is that was the year of the last complete census for the South Africa. So we didn't want to come here and talk about changes in poverty on the basis of surveys or projections, but rather in terms of actual coverage of the just with but we have a recommendation that we've done in the past that the Statistics of South Africa should actually be empowered to shorten the length between the census 10 years to below. There are budgetary issues in general, but we think the census is such an important and we're recommending starting with 5 and moving it to 3 in 3 years. And that recommendation has been in the pipeline for now close to 5 years. Then the issues around the well-being of land reform beneficiaries, I'll ask my colleague Alec to speak to that. It's a part of our bigger annual submission recommendation in Chapter 4. Where you can go into some of the reasons that we picked up in terms of what's explaining why they end up finding themselves worse off than before the current beneficiaries. Then the issues the issues around Honorable Flotano was saying why is there's such slow progress in terms of poverty reduction in rural areas compared to urban areas. And therein lies part of the actual question that motivated us to look into this. Part of the simplistic explanation is that the flavor of the moment is urban development. So everybody is focused on urban areas. And by that we want to think activity is diverted away from raw setting, raw standard setting. But much more deeper reason, at least from our analysis, is when you make the characterization of raw urban on the basis of settlement patterns, you will find that the core engine or core driver for reducing rural development in what you come up as rural areas is agriculture. And agriculture is only 2.5% of the overall economy. So even if you were to double, triple, quadruple agriculture, you are still going to be talking small proportion of the rural part of that economy. And the implication is you need to change the game in rural inspections. We don't say agriculture is not important, it is important, and in fact drives most of the reduction in poverty we are seeing in agricultural spaces. But we need another game that brings in the bigger numbers in rural settings. And what is that new game that we should see? That's the rest of the bigger recommendation when we speak to the other issues. Starting with even pure definitions of what is rural And in because we approach it from a financing perspective, you cannot allocate what you can't define. So if something is not defined, there is no transfer or allocation method. So first of all, yes. First of all, have that understanding of what rural development is. Common shared understanding that the Minister of Finance is using, that the Land Reform and Rural Development is using, that provinces are using. Then, when we come up with that agreement, and we call in our recommendation that actually Land Reform and Rural Development should be at the forefront of that work, where they bring in all the relevant players into it, all of them. Then when we get a common understanding, then design the funding flows. But at the moment, we don't have that common understanding of what the function is. Then the other broader issues I want to respond to, which around the issues around the drought. So the way we have approached this aspect from a commission perspective, again, is from the financing side of it. And we have tabled a separate report that says we need to develop what we call a vulnerability net. And we outline how that vulnerability net should be developed, applied to each of the provinces and municipalities, and use that index as an instrument for allocations. And that report was tabled last year in February, and is in the process of being processed through the channels. And I can also ask my colleague, the parliamentary liaison officer, to bring the report on that vulnerability index approach to arranging the financial flows. Issues such as the drought. And that report actually met some recommendations which are quite different from what we are seeing now. Now, currently, with this particular drought, we see that only 6 provinces have been declared if we apply that index, it talks about the severity of the impact, which again says you can't be a blanket approach of just declaring and then reallocating, but we do in that targeted way, which speaks to degree of vulnerability to a drought. Then there were a set of issues around stability and fluctuation in prices, which I thought was a fascinating discussion, and discussion that we should be having, because it goes to the core of well-being. One of the main drivers behind poverty is the prices. Prices, income, consumption are at the heart of any definition of poverty. So now with the prices, food prices in this particular case, there are many institutions working with these particular issues. And just looking at the kind of work that the Commission has done, our work points to being less favorable towards controlling output prices for food, for the reason that it works against the basic small farmer on the ground, ultimately.
So the approaches that we think it will make more difference in terms of price stabilization are interventions, you know, such as if you want to address food poverty, can we explore issues around food vouchers for those particular vulnerable groups without interfering with the output prices of food? Because if you do that, you may get the people that you want to benefit in the first place. Issues of cooperatives, which loosely translated into the kinds of issues that I think the honorable members had in mind about how to warehouse, open warehouse that stabilizes food in a particular region. I think the issue of cooperatives is one such area that has been shown to be quite successful, particularly in Scandinavian countries, without necessarily directly interfering with the working of the market. Because cooperatives and so on, the whole idea at the end of it all is breaking down monopolistic tendencies around setting off food prices. And that's what you want to address by all the different interventions, which is an issue around competition. And I think if we approach it from the competition issue, then we're going to get more buy-in without getting the people that we want to protect in the first place. The producer and the end consumer of the food. Then there were pointed questions on the presentation, the actual presentation itself, around some figures and beneficiaries. I'll ask Sasha to talk to the budget analysis questions, and then Ali will end with the broader question around why and what are the, some of our explanations why beneficiaries of land reform are now worse off than before they were beneficiaries.
Thank you, ma'am. Just from Angela Robertson's question, and I'll take the second one. And I would like to thank the Open Food Institution Program. As you know, the Amendment Act effectively required the department to open up the large number of land grants for another 5 years, from 2014 to 2019, but still to prioritize claims that had been lodged by 1998, what they referred to as old order claims. But now with the court declaring the Amendment Act invalid, the department can receive new claims and issue letters of acknowledgement, but they cannot process any of that until a new until a reenactment of that legislation. So it is likely that that 3% growth will be discrete on the old order the next day, okay, until the legislation is updated. I think the other budget related question was from Honorable Mbuni about the observations regarding the decline in rural development. And yes, our analysis picks up the very same trend, that program is set to decline significantly by 9.5% next year. And also, if you just look at the relative prioritization, and if you take, if you look at the proportion of the budget allocated to that specific program, you see that it drops, it will drop next year. So yes, our analysis concurs with that observation.
Just to address the question regarding the land reform outcomes of beneficiaries, as part of our submission for the 2017-18 Division of Revenue, which was tabled in May, Chapter 4 specifically looks at land reform. And in that study, what we did was we conducted a survey in three rural provinces. It was KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. And what we did was we essentially compared land reform beneficiaries with a control group that was not land reform beneficiaries. and but they have similar characteristics as salmon from different fisheries. And essentially what we found was that against all of those three outcomes, food security, agricultural productivity, as well as job creation, there was a significant decline or rather underperformance compared to the control group. And when we looked or dig into the reasons for that, essentially it came down to what one of the members was saying. Many of the land reform projects, after they commenced, eventually they became, they didn't continue. It was basically unoperational. So what we essentially found was that many farms that previously had people working on those farms, because they were unoperational, there was no agricultural productivity. And if agricultural productivity declined, but also at the same time, jobs were also lost. And that chapter basically provides a detailed assessment of our findings for those three provinces. And we'll be able to look at that once we get our copies from our parliamentary liaison officer. Then I think there was one question that was raised by, I think, Honorable Robertson, regarding whether we've assessed some kind of a trend compared to our previous submissions. Well, when we looked at last year's submission or presentation before this committee, and we compared with what we presented today, there are some similarities or patterns. On the one hand, the department spends almost its entire budget, but on the other hand, it spends 63% of its targets. So there's that variance that we've observed last year, and this year we've observed the same variance as well. Secondly, there's the issue the with respect to land reform claims settled. In this year, the department settled more land reform claims than last year, when we compared the number of land reform claims. So there's definitely an increase, but what is missing again compared to last year was that there's no information backlogs. So we can't assess the progress in actually addressing the backlogs that are actually outstanding, and how long it's actually going to take to address those backlogs. And then finally, the issues with respect to internal control was consistent last year. We picked it up. This year it was also picked up by the AG, so that's something that was consistent across the 2 years.
Thank you very much. I think some of the issues that I discussed are related to the department. I think every package, when we engage the department will, members will feel that the department will be able to do the promotion. But I would feel that the FFC is supposed to attend the children's meeting. So, can you please try to be short?
Thank you, Mr. Shaston. On the last response, I appreciate the fact that you say that you visited these three provinces and did some research. You know, my question is, in which way then were the beneficiaries poorer than the non-beneficiaries? You say job creation, which had been an improvement, since because jobs were lost because there was no longer any agricultural activity. How then do you find that they actually got poorer than the non-beneficiaries?
Yeah, we have details of that in the report, but what we also did was we compared the income of the different groups as well, and we essentially found that there was a variance between the two.
Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank the FSC for the informative presentation. I think the presentation in our oversight responsibility, and we keep on inviting you in our committees. But you have said that it would be better for us to invite you before we do the annual report of the department, so that when we engage the department in this annual report, we actually act with what the AG is presenting to us and what you are presenting to us, that this committee can please put an eye on this issue. We'll await the reports. It's promised by Dr. Lewis that some of the reports will be presented to the committee. Maybe they will assist us to work together with our
issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. Can we have then a 5 minutes break, then come back for our draft, to consider our draft BRRR report? Thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking notes.
maybe tomorrow. Probably tomorrow.
You have a problem?
Thank you.
being baptized with the
section which the chairperson is talking about, which she's referring to, about previous recommendations, which we have included, it's on page 8. So that's where we reflect on previous recommendations and whether they were responded to and whether the response was adequate, whether it addressed the committee's concerns. But let me go to these recommendations and then I will link with the previous recommendation on page 23. We start with the financial recommendations to the Minister of Finance.
Do all members have their reports?
Yeah.
Is the reports?
Which page are you on now?
23.
23.
Yes.
He's on page 23.
Okay. Thank you. firstly, the Minister of Finance should assist the Commission on restitution of land rights to develop and implement strategies to fund all commitments of 5.6 billion within the MTE period. Priority should be on claimant communities whose claims were settled before 2009 and the grant funding was not paid to them for a range of reasons. And failure to pay these approved grants in terms of Section 42C exposes the Commission to more contingent liabilities. So this arises from the discussion around the commitments which are continuing. What we do know about the commitments is that you have money in that category, which is grants that are due to communities. Then you have money that needs to be paid to farmers, but it's all commitment. What this committee does not know at this present moment is how much really is for the grants. And the reason why we put 2009 here is because 2009 there was a policy that was introduced, the RECAP policy, which actually takes away these grants going directly to communities but being channeled to the Recapitalization and Development Fund. Secondly, we recommend that the Minister must coordinate and finalize the development of an integrated funding model for support to land reform beneficiaries, smallholder farmers, emerging black commercial farmers. Intervention should further assist to address any duplication of services between DAF and Department of Rural Development and the other government departments. We now have information that, and it's based on presentation that was made last week, that RECAP will go to agriculture, to DAF, right? We don't have any tangible, so it's still better to put this in writing and have a proper response from the Minister of Finance on that. But even that, I foresee that there's still a role that the Department of Rural Development should still play. So that coordination, that integration, which includes Land Bank, CAS, MAFISA, and all that, that recommendation is still relevant. So those were the two recommendations that we are putting forward with regard to finance, just the budget. Let's look at what we had last year. Last year we recommended the commitments that they should be paid during the MTF period, and the Minister of Rural Development, the response that we have is for the Minister, our Minister, made a comment on this. We do not have a response from Treasury at this current moment. So the comment of the Minister of Rural Development is that the National Treasury is unable to fund the appropriately the funds, the restitution mandate due to the negative economic conditions. So at that point they said, look, the economy is there, we will not fund this the way you are asking. So we're putting it back as, you know, just for the ministry to focus on the grants that are due to communities. The second one was the finalization of integrated funding model. If you look at the response there, the Department of Rural Development speaks about the creation of a new branch, which is redistribution and development, which is pursuing partnerships with core funding entities such as Land Bank, NEF, Omnia, and this will not be limited to core funding, but the provision of multiplicity of essential support services such as peer investment, due diligence, training, mentoring. In addition, the department will form partnerships with commodity associations, grain. I think this is good, it's a good explanation, but what we do not see is, so what is this model? What is this policy that they will be? So yes, we hear these ideas, but the recommendation was getting a model documented, which says this is how it's going to be done. And from previous engagements in the committee, the department said National Treasury is doing that. So we are recommending to National Treasury to finalize that. So perhaps this is what the department is doing in the meantime. But that recommendation, in my view, I think it still stands. For rural development, on page 24 of our report, the recommendation to the Minister of Rural Development and Land and Reform, last year we spoke about, last BRR, we recommended a survey of all land reform farms with an intention to begin a process of, you know, just getting the socio-economic impact of land reform intervention. So that recommendation was there, and look at the response. I'm sure Honorable Filtani will be interested in the response of the minister. They say that they will use they will use existing partnerships with ARC, NAMC to do that survey, which then will look at the productivity of land reform farms. And they will also use the survey to determine the socio-economic impact assessment. It appears that there's a commitment that they will do this. We do not know when. So it seems that this is a project that they are interested in doing. But for this year, we are again putting it back with an idea that we need to get a commitment about when, and you know, this survey will be conducted. So conduct a national survey of land reform farms to understand the socio-economic impact. It's repeated in your report when I delete that. Socio-economic impact of land reform today. The committee further recommended that this assessment must take the form of, can be worded differently, of the quality of life survey of the then Department of Land Affairs.
Sorry, sir. Thank you, sir. Just on that one, to date from when? Socioeconomic impact of land reform from when to date? I think we need to be specific. Thank you.
Yeah. I agree. Since the inception of land reform, unless you think we should have a 5-year, but the idea was that we need to know what's happening from the SLAG projects, you know, that the earlier projects to date. So I agree, we need to put a date from where.
Thank you.
Secondly, given the intention of substantial increase in the number of sites for implementing, in the number of sites, no, doesn't make sense. But given the intention to substantially increase the number of sites for implementation of the strengthening of the relative rights for people working the land, the minister should table results of the pilot of the policy with detailed analysis of the project, lessons, and policy considerations for the rollout of the project as suggested in the annual report.
You have said the policy, but here it's not written, because we have to get the policy first, then the results of the pilot. Honorable Walters?
Chair, on that point, you've got it, if you don't mind me taking you one step back. I just realized that as I was sort of absorbing the point. When we talk of socioeconomic impact, it's not just the socioeconomic impact, because that refers to the, call it, impact of livelihoods of land reform projects, but also the sustainability of the projects and the feedback that was covered. But I just think we should have it in the recommendation as well, conduct a national survey of land reform farms, understand the socioeconomic impact. I suggest the word on livelihoods, it's common terminology in assessments of made of land reform projects, and the sustainability of land reform projects to date. I just think it clears it up, and the clearer our questions or recommendations, the clearer the responses will be. And I'd support your what you were saying. We actually need to know where, not just the pilot projects are, but what the, where the policy is on that. And you will recall that was something we've been requesting, I think, since our very first portfolio committee meeting, so that we can interrogate exactly what the policy is and what the pilot projects are, what lessons we can learn from that. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for those inputs. So the point around the policy, Chair, you're suggesting that we should have a recommendation about the department submitting the policies. What we had there was that we know that there is now a revised program which has been agreed with, you know, the leader of the business. So we are saying that they must then adhere to that revised program. But then it doesn't, it's not saying the minister must bring that report, in which we can ask the department to bring that. We don't need to, in my view, we don't need to bring a recommendation like that. I'm still on 7.2.
2.2. Chet, I think the concern I said today is that this strengthening the relative rights for people working in the land has been, we've been reading about it in the media, we've been hearing about it, we haven't actually seen the policy as it's being updated. And from my understanding is it's what we saw in the beginning of our term here in Parliament and how it evolved is not necessarily the same thing, you know. So it's, I think it's, I would suggest the wording that, where it says the minister should table, comma, the policy as it currently stands, results, comma, results of the pilot of the policy, the rest of it to remain the same. I just think we should put in the clause there, the policy as it currently stands behind should table. I would suggest if there's some problem in bringing this to the committee, then I think we deal with it then. But I don't think it will be very difficult to assess the success of the policy if we don't actually know what the policy is and compare the two with one another.
Then there was that about the recommendation about keeping to, and we know it's been a weakness as where we have a legislative program and not achieve what has been planned. So there's a recommendation around that, adhering to those things. 7.2.3. Addition. I think what I wanted to bring together recommendations that talks to policy issues, but perhaps it's not as it stands, you cannot connect them. So it needs to be a standalone. We'll put it as a separate recommendation. If you look in the responses from the minister, 7.2.2, the response was that communal land tenure policy, agricultural land holdings policy, strengthening of relative rights of person working the land policy have been finalized together with draft bills. They were undergoing socio-economic assessment as required by cabinet. And again, a revision of the legislative program. So maybe, yes, those policies 7.2.3, the recommendation is continue to engage and coordinate agri-park interventions with the Department of Agriculture. Small business, trade and industry to maximize use of limited resources and avoid duplication of government interventions. Further enhance the capacity of the department to coordinate such interventions and the expertise from other government departments.
The sense of the word convene suggests that we are aware of engagements that have already been initiated.
Can you be reminded as to when this started or at which stage these engagements?
Ah, I don't quite seem to remember now that we got a report to say that the minister or the department is engaged in talks with these departments, especially small businesses. Let's remove the word continue. If we don't have proof that this process has already started, just say to engage.
Well, the reason we put continue is because in previous meetings, the department spoke about engagements. And in this committee, we also had a meeting where Department of Agriculture and Rural Development made joint presentations about the work that they are doing. So in previous meetings, there has been engagement. And if I remember very well, I'm not too sure whether all members were there, but at some point in this committee, sorry.
E249.
E240. Yeah. We were there.
That's why I requested that someone reminds me.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
So it's okay. Still fine to say continue.
Yeah,
or
sure. Yeah.
Chair, I really appreciate that we be as thorough as humanly possible. I'm just thinking, Chair, I'll be the last person to go, so no worries, but I'm just thinking if we shouldn't be dealing with issues much more level of principal and high level, and then the dotting of the I's and crossing of the T's, that definitely be welcomed for members to submit, Chair. And that is the principles for which we stand. It's 1 o'clock, but like I said, Chair, I'm the last one to leave the room if needs be. So I'm not saying it out of panic, but I'm just thinking if we go in line by line, we probably spend fruitlessly another 3 hours here. Now, I'm not insinuating here, but just to construct here.
Okay.
You know,
the intention of the line by line. We just consider the proposal of that, so that when we come next week, we just look at the additions that the members have submitted to the support staff and waste enough time, because we have been dealt with these ones that have been tabled. I think that was the intention, so that we move together on the same page. Next week, we consider the new proposals. I think also to be able for our support staff to finalize it on time.
Chairperson, I would like to support the proposal. I think what we have is actually a very good set of recommendations that I think was also well framed. Can I suggest, as you are suggesting, I think what we should do is any changes, and I suspect it's going to be fairly small changes, that is ordered to the support staff, and we sign off at the next meeting. I would support the proposal made.
Any counter? Honorable Fulton.
I'd like to get a straightforward confirmation that all of a sudden, Honorable Walters is being led by Honorable Nguni.
Do we agree on this proposed recommendation?
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Then secondly, I think we have to just go through them and make submissions. Consider the, I think the support staff should consider the we adopt the recommendations of the Auditor General. If we adopt those resolutions, they should be part of this, of the committee's resolution, so that we're able to check the implementation of those resolutions. Furthermore, they should also support staff should assist us by looking at the recommendations that have been made by the FFC. Then they table them, members make some submissions, so that next week when we come, we just consider those new added recommendations so that we adopt the report. Do we agree? Honourable members, thank you very much. I think we'll defer the minutes to the next meeting. I'll just give Chililo 4 minutes to make an announcement. My apology for not taking the apology for Pula.
Yes, I was going to come
to that. Yes. When she's sick, so that is why we put the secretary. Yes, to assist us. That's which is very common. We don't expect So, Chililo, can you just brief members, honorable members, on the oversight?
Thank you, Chair. The plan or application to conduct public hearings on ESTA amendments has been approved starting this weekend in the Eastern Cape in Ado. And members will get information, SMSs will be sent regarding their flight details and accommodation. I think the plan is that we all travel on Friday, sleep there, so we can start on time. If people are flying in on Saturday morning, it may be difficult. And those that are driving, probably arrangements can be made. So that is the plan. That the approval also includes the hearings for the Northern Cape, which is scheduled for the 19th. Well, between the 12th of November. So further arrangements will be communicated after we come from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, specifically in regard to that, the Parliamentary Office of Osaka requested to be invited to the provincial public hearings, because we would wish to have taxes also attending the public hearings. And we probably could extend it to the other taking regulations also.
Yes,
thank
you. I won't make it to the public here. Means the father that we can.
Okay, you will tell that that apology will be supposed to have been also with the committee. Thank you very much, and I will remind us. Thank you very much.
I'm giving you the
Thank you.